Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Build
film
Conversation.
Hooray!
Hooray!
Woo. Right, guys, we're here once again to chat about films, but this week is special, at least for us in this moment in time, because it is pretty much Christmas week for us, and we're recording a special Christmas episode.
It's a very special one.
Yeah, we've put a bit of tinsel around the old film bin and sprayed a bunch of fake snow everywhere, and we're feeling festive. And the film that was suggested by Anthony is a Christmas gem that we were all looking forward to watching. We've probably seen it a million times. It's on every Christmas. No, Anthony, what was the film you chose for us this week?
Well, I'll introduce the whole film, shall I? Released in 2005 and set in a world where Santa Claus is actually the spawn of Satan and is now intent on spreading carnage and death at Christmas after being released from an old bet. Santa's Sleigh follows teenager Nick Yulson, his grandfather, and his girlfriend as they become top priority on Santa's new kill list. Directed and written by David Steinman, Santa's Sleigh stars former pro wrestler Bill Goldberg as Santa, as well as Douglas Smith, Emily Daravin, and Robert Culp. Santa's Sleigh, everyone.
So it's a Christmas horror comedy, right? Wrestler movie? If that's
Yes.
a genre, I'm
It's
certainly
so
not
many
in.
things.
The implied question mark at the end of comedy is really important.
Yeah.
IMDb also added fantasy into the mix, which I guess it had to since it's about Santa Claus.
It's kind of a sick and twisted fantasy, but sure.
Yeah, it is a strange bird. It's
But we're gonna carve it up like it's Christmas and add a extra dash of bloody cranberry to the. I'm not very good at Christmas. I'm not good at any analogies or any sort of decorative language. Hence the phrase decorative language. I just can't talk. We should talk about our expectations because that's what we always start off with. Anthony, seeing as you picked it, what was the reason slash expectation coming into this one?
Well, I have to admit, I have a kind of thing, well, tradition, I suppose, for Christmas horror films in general. And as horror films go, they're one of the more tame ones. And I know, like, the film bin crew aren't giant fans of horror in general. So I thought, of all the times I could do this, now would be a good time to shove it in.
Yeah, no time like Christmas to watch a horror film.
Oh, but they're always so. Christmas horror films are brilliant because they're not scary at all.
There's no way it's not
Ever.
going to be funny, is it, really? Even if it's done with sincerity, there's no way you're not going to, crack a few puns.
Yes.
Well, Abby, seeing as you probably like the wrestling link because you're a resident wrestling aficionado, even though a bunch of us watch wrestling occasionally. What did you make when Anthony suggested this film?
I had heard of it before because I considered doing a spoiler filled where the choices were all wrestler movie. So I did know that he'd made it. But I was happy that someone else had suggested it because I feel like there's a stigma attached to me picking things with wrestlers in.
Sure, I mean, I do like a good wrestler movie as well as you, Abby, and they always are bad. Like, it doesn't matter what caliber of film it is, no matter what wrestler's in it, chances are it's bad. There are a few good ones, but mostly it's a sign that you're desperate for actors if you've hired a wrestler.
I was going to go on to say that the thing with wrestler movies is, while they're usually of questionable quality, they are usually a bit funny because they prefer to do comedies, and it's a novelty to see them. So at the very least, I was expecting this to be novel and mildly funny.
I would say you've pretty much nailed that. It is novelty and it is mildly funny. That's pretty much the review done out from my point of view. But Jamie, have you seen this before?
No.
Or should I say, have Yuletide seen this before?
Oh.
I won't do any Christmas puns if I can help it.
No, I'd heard of it. And it just, I had no idea what to expect. I think I thought it was going to be more in line with something like See No Evil that has Kane in it, where they attempt to make, you know, a reasonably serious horror movie. And I thought, how are they going to do that with, like, Santa? And I didn't quite realise the tone that they were going to go for. And I think, having watched the film, I don't think they quite realised the tone they were going to go for.
Yeah, they realised too late, and then they couldn't go back.
Yeah.
It's very much a slapstick kind of horror film.
See, that sentence shouldn't exist.
Well, you know, I didn't want. I haven't seen it before. I just thought, oh, Goldberg, Santa, Christmas, brilliant. Let's watch it. I mean, I just wanted to see a Santa lay the smackdown into a bunch of people, and it provides that. And I wasn't sure whether it was going to be like really ridiculously gory and go for that kind of laugh, or if it was going to be. It looked from the trailer, it just looked kind of jolly and dopey, like he was going to be, you know, just putting people through tables and stuff, and, you know, like a wrestling match, but also Christmas. Like, I don't know.
Basically, you got everything you wanted out of the film in the first 5 minutes. You stopped watching.
Yeah, and well, anyway, let's discuss the film in more detail. Let's go through it sort of vaguely. It's kind of a badly written story in that it seems to be made up as this goes along. Like, there's a general premise, but outside of making you slightly care about the main characters, it doesn't really have many ideas to how to resolve a plot, I'd say.
No, and lots of side distractions for crudely made penis jokes, usually.
Yeah, or really awful, yeah, like, Christmas puns that,
oh,
like,
so couldn't many think of better puns. Ones.
Yeah, but they were atrocious. I mean, people always do Christmas puns in things, and I guess they didn't want to use really famous ones from, like, I don't know, Futurama or something. Like, because Futurama has a sort of evil Santa in it that probably took a lot of the good puns. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I suppose.
I think maybe the problem they had with the puns is this film was made so cheaply they couldn't even afford them, because they certainly couldn't afford any actual licensed music.
Yeah.
Therefore, we had the soundtrack that we had.
It was amazing times.
Some of the most weird juxtaposition of music to image that I've seen.
I was going to bring this up later, but since it's come up, I think I could have forgiven this movie a lot of its visual cheapness if the music had been better, but as it was, the music was just awful.
You didn't like the song Christmas Time, Christmas Time, Christmas Time? That was sure that was the song at one point.
Or the rap when they get in the car.
Oh,
the Christmas rap.
This is amazing. Like it is just this oddly cheap music. And yet, I think it's kind of touching that, you know, some musicians have had to contribute in some way to making
someone
many songs.
That.
Yeah. I think well done to them. It was a weird juxtaposition most of the time, but
It was funny.
Yeah, it was.
Most of the time. Yeah. So I have no problems with it. I don't know. I think there's actually a bit of production value in this film compared to
where
some of the other Christmas-themed horror films.
Compared to 1950s B-movies, it's got a good production value.
I agree with Anthony. I think there's some stuff in there that they've done quite well, but it meant that they did cheap out on the music in the end.
I would say all of the money went on Goldberg's Santa costume, which is actually not bad.
It was lovely, wasn't it?
It was good, yeah.
You could practically feel it.
It was kind of a Norse Viking Santa vibe, as well as nasty evil Santa.
Because
He's the son of Satan, and also he's Norse. So he has slightly Norse-themed things, like his sleigh has a kind of Viking boat motif. Yeah. Instead of a deer, he has a bison, a white bison from hell.
Yeah.
They call it a reindeer because it flies or something.
Yeah, because reindeers fly.
It's like an albino buffalo, isn't it?
Yes, and his hat is kind of, I don't know, how would you describe his hat?
oh, there's a Canadian word for those hats.
It's almost like a crown before they put all the metal and jewels on.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I kind of know what that means. It's a bit of fabric for your head.
I don't know. Yeah, okay, fine.
It's a weird hat, and it's possibly Canadian, Abby.
I am trying to remember what it's called. I'll get there.
Okay.
Because a lot of this was filmed. I think this is a Canadian film.
Yeah, it was made by the, Alberta Arts Council or something, it says at the end.
The word arts shouldn't be anywhere near this. Oh. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting look for Santa. And I think it kind of works. He's the right guy for the sort of buff, I'll beat you up and kill people in weird, funny ways. It works, doesn't it? Like, he looks kind of like a good version of like a hard looking Santa. Because there's a few in culture a bit. It's, you know, every now and again, maybe a video game or like an animation will have an interesting looking Santa.
It's a completely brimless hat. It's a toque.
Thank you, our Canadian wrestling hat expert.
I don't know, I thought, I don't know if it's jumping ahead a little bit, but I was surprised by how decent Goldberg was at, I don't know how to say this without sounding ridiculous or like I've had a stroke, but I thought Bill Goldberg made a decent scary Santa.
They played to his strengths. It was the key.
Yeah.
Be big, strong, angry, and sort of funny in a really intimidating way.
Yeah.
And just enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
Which he clearly was.
He did. He clearly was having fun, and that means you have fun, usually.
I think that was one of the almost endearing parts of the film, actually, was that I could tell everyone was having fun, because in a lot of the scenes, they looked like they were bordering on corpsing, like, constantly. Like, everyone looked like they were about to laugh, just out of shot.
Yeah.
Why is it called corpsing if you're about to laugh? Surely corpsing is not knowing what to say.
I thought it was an inverse thing, where when you were playing a corpse and you started to laugh, that was exactly...
Oh, right. Oh, I see.
That makes sense.
Well, I wasn't like being devil's advocate or the son of the devil or whatever. I was just like, I was just curious why it's called corpsing. But that aside, we've talked a bit about Bill Goldberg playing evil Santa, but the introduction we get to him, like you mentioned, the first 5 minutes is kind of quite the opener. We basically get a family having a Christmas dinner, but they're all kind of obnoxious. That people are cheating on their partners. There's kind of, I'm just going to say
Chris
it.
Kattan.
Sorry.
One of them's Chris Kattan. You know, that's
yes,
bad enough.
That's weird. And James Caan is there, the head of the table. And they all die, but it's such a weird choice of, like, how did they get, like, was he just up for it? Is he cheap? I mean, he's in The Godfather and he's in Misery. He's really good in those. What's he doing in this?
It kind of feels like maybe... Is it like a fake out for the film? Like you turn it on and you see this, and you see James Caan, and you see like actual vaguely recognizable people.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but only Chris Kattan and Fran Drescher. It's not really like, wow, I gotta watch this.
Maybe, but James Caan's got that power at least.
Yeah, and it might be one of those situations where a lot of people would do things if they were only asked.
Yeah,
and it might be they just asked James Caan. He went, yeah, sure, I'd love to.
I did notice that Brett Ratner was a producer on the film, so he might have called in a few favors.
Used his sway. Yeah,
this was back 2005. He had tiny amount of credibility there.
I mean, you know, James Caan isn't like the biggest mega movie star ever. I was just thinking, this is odd. I didn't expect you. The TV actors, sure. I expected a few TV actors to make appearances in low-budget films. Fair enough, but it was a surprise. And they all get like, faked out because they're all just... Like, Santa basically smashes through the chimney, starts killing them all in novel and inventive ways.
But for no apparent reason.
The thing is, some of the ways are novel and inventive. Like, he sets Fran Drescher's head on fire, then drowns her in eggnog. Or, like, impales James Caan's hands to the table, then sticks a turkey leg in his mouth and smashes it through his head. But then he just kicks Chris Kattan into a cupboard. He only had three ideas he really wanted to do when he broke in.
But that kick looked amazing when he kicked him in the cupboard. That's not realism.
And he didn't need to kill him, because just living was punishment enough.
Yeah.
I think the disappointment was he just sort of scares one woman. She faints and falls on like a sharp object. It's like, really?
Yeah. Oh. Like, he must have just been thinking, oh, that was lucky.
Yeah. I think there was a Ninja Star Christmas Star thing. Like, and also, just the leg of the table was a bit uninventive. Like, I think I think the woman from, like, Earth 2, is that the woman from Earth 2?
Yeah, that was Earth 2 woman, yeah.
Oh, well, fair enough. But I will say, with the amount of killings that go on, I think the film is stays fairly inventive and original in the ways that have him killing him.
I can't say that I noticed him doing the same kill twice. He may have, but you didn't particularly notice.
The things you expect are like a candy cane to the eye or something, or like strangled with like Christmas lights. But there were some like choice ideas. Like, we skip about a bit, but they're in like the strip club where Santa decides to kill more people. He has quite a good one where he fights off some guys with the stripper pole, which he polishes first, which I thought was a nice touch because he wanted all the skank rubbed off it. But then he passes it to a guy and then kicks it into a light, so he gets electrocuted via the pole, which I thought was quite good.
I'm pretty sure as well, just as a nod to wrestling fans, that guy was Vince Russo.
Oh, wow. Like, the terrible wrestling, you know, writer.
I do know who Vince Russo is. I didn't recognise him, though, because I've only really seen sort of latter-day Vince Russo, where he's not looking very well.
Glad he died.
Well,
he's done some terrible rip-off things for wrestling.
He has.
Oh, anyway.
Because Vince Russo was in it, it's just reminded me, one of the things I was amazed at when this movie ended and I looked up the credits was that Vince McMahon was in no way involved. And this film, like, reeks of Vince McMahon. Like, everything in it, I could see this just, like, happening on several episodes of SmackDown.
It does seem like a Christmas special. If it was, like, just, you know, 15 minutes of unwanted skit on an episode of Christmas Raw, you'd totally accept that happened as the film is. It is like a Vince McMahon idea played out longer. but on the same budget they'd lend to a WWE film.
Yeah, I was stunned that he had nothing to do with it.
but you know, It was you know, there were on the wrestling link. I don't want to forget, because there was another wrestling link to it, and he's been a spoiler film repeat cameo guy, and not even a cameo in one. He was a legitimate role in another film. But the guy who plays the wrestler known as Zeus was in this film as well.
Tiny Lister.
That's
Oh yeah, he was a tiny cameo as a like shop assistant, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was just some like gas. Yeah. Clerk, or I don't know what the term for someone who works at a gas station is. Abby, you've done that job. What was your name when you were a gas clerk?
Abby, working in a supermarket. And yes, correct, Jamie. That was my name.
Okay, so Tiny Lister plays Abby. And it's just a weird... He's come up a bunch in other of our podcasts, and I'd like to think we'll have to do something else with him in just to... There's loads of it.
We'll have to have him.
Sorry.
We'll have to have him on.
Yeah.
We can do our 50th show, which is coming up, and we can have both Tiny Lister and Sherlock Holmes. Then that pretty much covers everything we do in spoiler film.
Yeah, we might have a Sherlock Holmes planned, incidentally. Anyway, this is too much foreshadowing. Back to the film. We've only talked about the opener, and a bit about Goldberg, but what happens kind of to set up the main characters who aren't evil Santa is we go to, like, a Jewish deli where, like, our main character hero works. Oh, in fact, both of them. There's a 16-year-old boy who works there and a similar-aged girl. And the Jewish guy that they make a big deal about being Jewish. They're at a deli serving a horrible old woman.
Everyone in this movie is terrible.
It's so that you don't feel
beginning
bad when
with
they
this
die.
Old woman. To be fair, they all do live in a town called Hell. So
what is with that?
Like, it's just another pun to go with all the millions of other puns in this film.
What I really loved it. Yeah, there's a place in the place that they live called Hell's Bells. I really want to go there. I want to go to Hell's Bells.
You'd be amused for about 5 minutes. Then you'd be like, "Oh, how do I get out of here?"
Hell's Bells.
Yeah.
No reference is ever made to the hell thing. It's just, it's hell. Hell Township. That's it. Like, I remember when the film starts and the we haven't talked about the weird opening credits yet.
Oh yeah.
The book explains everything, but in a different language, so you can't really work out what's going on.
Yeah. The film really keeps, like, for the first quarter, it just kind of keeps you in mystery as to why you just witnessed Santa killing everyone.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
It really needs the explanation.
Yeah, and the explanation, like, does it, like, it suggests that it's going to come gradually, and then you just get told everything all at once, and that's it.
Yeah. Mm. Because we meet our main characters, young boy, 16, young girl, horrible granny. She gets killed after... She was so horrible, though. It was like, well done. She literally, like, she basically insults them all and is a horrible granny. It was exactly that. I mean, she gets killed by Santa, hooray, leave her in a burning car. But we've been shown the main characters, and the young lad, I don't know his name. Does the character have a name?
Nicholas
Yulson.
He is kind of our hero of the piece, and he's kind of got a love interest in the girl he works with, and she's part of it as well. They're kind of a team trying to evade Santa. But initially, the story gets explained by Nicholas's grandfather, who is part insane, part conspiratorial, part angel. He's a weird guy. He's the town crazy. Does anyone have anything to say about him?
He's played by the very handsome Robert Culp. Apparently.
We are referring listeners to Robert Culp's own IMDb page.
I wasn't. I was just saying he's handsome.
But it was... I spent a very long time watching this movie going, I know that face. I know that voice.
Yeah.
And yet, I don't really know you. But he did a really good job of what he was doing. Sort of crazy old man, but one you really hoped wasn't, rather than just accepting, well, he's as mad as a bag of smashed crabs, isn't he?
Well, it's the fact that he's kind of a Wallace and Gromit, Cracticus Potts type granddad who invents things, but has also a secret bunker in case, I don't know, nuclear holocaust or something. But he also believes, but doesn't think it's very important to do anything about Santa being the son of Satan and there being a curse that he, we find out later, was directly involved in. He doesn't seem to think, after the 1,000 years bet is up, I have to do anything. He decides just to casually tell his grandson about it because he asks about Christmas. Sorry, I found it
but
a bit annoying.
But they're not really telling. No, it's, and like, why? What's the connection between him being an angel and him being a crazy inventor?
None at all.
Okay.
They just needed him to be crazy, and inventors are crazy, I guess.
There's some kind of backstory about his wife and him becoming immortal because he married a woman and stuff that we don't really get to know much about.
I don't think he becomes... Well, no, he does become mortal, and yet has still been alive for 1,000 years.
Yeah, I don't think they worried too much, is the thing, which seems to be a common problem with the films we view, is just people don't seem to worry about the details. They just go, he's just crazy, and he can explain the backstory for Evil Santa. Which I guess we should just hammer it all out now. It takes a couple... There's kind of an interesting animated moment midway through the movie when he finds out more about it.
That was when I was actually starting to think, maybe I can get on board with this, because that was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was kind of like... Were they Rankin Bass cartoons from like the 50s or 60s? And it kind of was reminiscent of those, wasn't it?
Yeah, sort of your classic cartoon animation Christmas time stuff.
Yeah, that's what I think. That's what they were trying to recreate, is those like American stop motion cut, like there's one about Rudolph or something. I don't know, but yeah.
I think what's interesting about this film is it shows quality at times. Like you mentioned, the opening credits have kind of the weird language, but they have a sort of story for. They kind of start to explain the story in the opening credits with some illustrations, and they have pictures of angry looking Santas throughout the ages, like sort of different types of.
Angry Santa having to do good things, which only like occurred to me after I'd watched the film.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking back at it and realised, oh, that's why he looked so mad, and that was because he hated what he was doing.
That's why there's so many horrible Santas when you're a kid. When you go and visit one, it's actually the real Santa. That's why he smells of booze and is horrible. It's because it's just Bill Gold begrudgingly doing being nice for like 1,000 years. But it had that moment where you kind of go, oh, it's really nice. They've done like kind of 1950s looking imagery. They've done like 1800 style imagery of Santa. And it's like, there's times where the quality comes through. And I think the animation was a good example of when, do you know, if this had had a little more effort, a little more budget, this could have been like quite a good Christmas movie to remember, you know? Not that it isn't.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. I think for this genre of film, it is pretty good.
But the bar.
But I am speaking relative here.
Yeah.
There is a bar. It's a very poor discount tinsel bar that you can, like, that is very low.
It's not so much set high or low as it is rolling around on the floor and people are trying to catch it and put it back in it.
To stretch a metaphor, yes. But who's going to explain the backstory of Santa anyway?
Well, I suppose he's kind of like the Antichrist, because Santa is the son of Satan, brought to Earth, I guess, as a response to Jesus. Yeah. It wasn't particularly clear.
Isn't he like the only other Immaculate Conception in existence or something?
With some chick, Satan and Erica, was it? Like just some random bird I've never heard of.
So yeah, and then as the opposite of Jesus, he's here to spread misery and carnage instead of love and peace.
Yeah.
Which he also does on Christmas Day.
On his birthday, he slaughters people. And then because of how horrible that is, people did special Christmas ceremonies. And I don't know, they got an angel involved when it became out of hand. Hence the weird grandpa who previously was an angel setting up. This is a weird bet that he made as well, guys. Like, well, the bet consisted of curling, which I find particularly remarkable.
It's a Canadian film.
Yeah.
So basically, Santa, who is horrible,
I thought myself it was quite a clever little thing going on. So what is it? It is curling. It's the first, whoever can get it closest to the center wins.
Yeah.
But instead of a center, it's the hole. So whoever can get it closest to the hole without falling in wins. So then Santa goes first in his arrogance, thinking he's going to win, and gets it as close as he can. But then the angel tricks him by knocking his curl, I guess they're called, into the hole.
And thus he is forced to be nice for 1,000 years at Christmas time. Arbitrarily. And then 1,000 years is up in 2005. And so that's why Santa's like, right, I am going to punish everyone for being, just because I'm horrible. So that's why he's killing everyone, I guess.
Yeah, he's kept it all in that long that he just has to have one massive purge of all his resentment and hate.
Plus he was evil anyway, so, you know.
It's just what he does.
And then the angel who became an old man, disguise himself as an old man, has subsequently over the 1,000 years hooked up with a normal woman and has become an inventor and has decided to do nothing about it apart from casually tell his grandson when the time comes why Santa is killing everyone. and thus our little team of Nicholas, his sort of girlfriend, and grandpa are the ones in charge of trying to stop Santa, who's for some reason terrorizing specifically the town of Hell. I don't understand.
Well, I think they do try and explain it at the end, where he, like the grandfather angel guy, purposely lived somewhere where he could be traced. But then that opens up a lot of questions of, is that really how you protect your grandson?
What's the best way to keep him? I know.
Yeah, we don't get explained where Nicholas's parents are either. It's just that classic, it's Christmas, therefore there are orphans involved.
Or why he hasn't inherited any, like, angel genes from his granddad.
Well, that's another film. Angel Genes is a rom-com Christmas movie. But anyway, whatever, that's the thing we're dealt with to explain it all away. But it's essentially a plot based on, well, Santa's trying to kill them specifically, the Nicholas and his friend. I should really know the name of the girl in it. Anyone?
Mac.
A very girly name.
Mary Mac McKenzie.
Okay, right, good. Well, so Nicholas and Mac are on the run. Grandpa is sort of trying to help them and survive as well, a bit.
But not really, because yeah. He's just at home.
and the town is sort of suffering. The town is being murdered as we go along. I guess Santa has a grudge against Nick because while he comes across them, after slaying the whole police force, incidentally, just sort of mostly off camera, he sort of tases one guy in the downstairs area and leaves the rest of them poetically lying in the police station in various funny ways. And go on.
I was just going to say, like, he has this, it speaks volumes about the film. He goes on this kind of lazy, disorganized rampage.
Yeah.
Where he just kind of does stuff. Like, he goes into the deli and murders, what was his
Saul
name?
Rubinette.
Their boss.
Mr.
Queen. Yeah. Like, pins him to the wall with his, I can't remember what the nine candles thing
menorah.
Is called. He just kind of wanders around town, goes into a strip club, kills everyone, including Vince Russo.
With whatever's at hand.
And yeah, he has this, like, he obviously is after, Grandpa's never given a name, he's just Grandpa, but he doesn't quite have the focus of your usual horror movie slasher.
It's almost as if they didn't think about what he needs to do. They just had him in situations, isn't it?
Yeah, just had a bunch of jokes and thought.
It is. I think you've said it correctly when you said lazy rampage, because at some points he's just doing something that anyone would do, and then he just kicks off because, you know, he's a pro wrestler at heart, and they always start fights. But like at one point, he's just ringing a bell and collecting coins. It's like, how long did he do that before someone tried to mug him, and then he rightfully takes them down with a candy cane? Like, why was he doing that? Why is he just nipping into places in one town when he can fly? He has he flies in his weird sleigh thing. He can breathe fire. He has weird supernatural powers. And yet he likes to just, you know, pick people up and slam them because he's Goldberg. Like, it's really odd that he doesn't... he's not that bothered about doing a lot of murdering.
There was an odd dearth of actual wrestling moves in this film. Because usually, like, every time you see an action movie with a wrestler in, they will slip a couple of proper wrestling, like signature wrestling moves in there. Mm. And the only thing I noticed was that in the animation bit where they explain the backstory, the animated Santa does the Goldberg thing of punching himself in the head twice and doing the weird arm thing that he used to do.
I think there was a spear at some point.
There was a spear through the counter in the deli.
And those weird press slams, he seems to do that a lot.
But they usually work in something quite complicated, like, okay, the Rock, you're the Scorpion King, but we want a rock bottom in here somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, he seems to have weirdly decided to powerbomb someone. it would have been nice for a few more wrestling moves, I think.
Yeah, the film is so cheap that it wouldn't have looked out of place if he'd gone, like, really all out and done something complicated like a pump handle slam or something.
That would be brilliant. With a bit of showmanship and taunting as well. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if Goldberg was still part of the WWE at this point. So I don't know how much he still wanted to be kind of associated with it. So maybe that could have been a quality why there wasn't so much wrestling in it.
Well, I think he went into this thinking this will be my breakout role. This will.
I think it was in the era between like him being the biggest name in WCW and going to WWE for a bit and stuff. Oh, so okay. It could have been in that middle ground where he was legitimately trying to retire into something else.
Okay, so it's just incompetence then.
It's hard to say what they were thinking, but we could have done with like a suplex or two, you know, extra.
Yeah.
But yeah, like so there is just a vague rampage as carol singers are taken out and just the townsfolk generally get beaten up and smashed about and it's half brutal and half silly.
Also, a statue of Jesus gets decapitated.
Oh, they kind of
one of my more favourite visual moments.
Is that the one where he plows through on the sleigh, just through the nativity scene?
Yeah.
What I particularly liked about that is that Bill Goldberg himself is Jewish. So it was a bit like, you're totally fine with that. That's okay.
That was the other thing was the little moments of strange anti-Semitism inserted into the film, like killing Saul Rubinek with the menorah. But then in that scene, when the police come to investigate, the weirdly slapstick incompetent police who turn up, one of whom is very, very short and fat, and one of whom is very tall and slim, just start like talking to they talk to the Jewish guys, and they've always got. They got weird names. I think one of them's like Dick Lipschitz or something. and then the tall one refers to them as those Amish guys outside.
Yeah, there are odd moments. It just kind of, you know, seems to be just oddly having a pop at whatever it feels like. But there's another weird moment of the montage throughout the film of people being beaten up with various Christmas-themed things. At one point, we cut to a family we've never seen of like old people and two little kids that swear a lot and are a bit horrible.
Yeah,
and then their heads get blown off when they open their presents, and it's just and they cut away from that again.
I think that was actually my favourite scene of the whole film.
Like, there's a lot of childish swearing throughout the film. Like, a lot of people swear a lot, but it's that kind of indulgent childish humour that it's... But a lot of the time, it's a really funny one. Like, the old granny who gets killed, she swears brilliantly. And the kids are quite funny when they swear. And, like, there are some choice moments of bad language throughout the film. Nicholas getting a present off of his friend, and she gets him a gun. I mean, do you remember the line? It was just
I do remember the line.
I will say, just avoid the F word. Just say F word or whatever instead of swearing, because we're trying to keep it family, despite talking about a film that's an 18. Weird.
He goes, I don't mean to seem ungrateful, but are you flumping retarded?
I was pleased. Because it was such... That's the response you give when someone gives you a gun.
Exactly. Because you do kind of think, what is going on? Is this just escalating? And he literally says the exact thing you would say if someone got you a gun for Christmas. It was brilliant.
And you like, and then it's the fact that is then punctuated with he turns the gun, he opens the gun out into a rubbish-looking Transformer ripoff.
I know. Yeah. It melted my mind.
And she even says... She even says it's more than meets the eye.
It was just that line really made me laugh, and I had to pause. And then when we played it back, the Transformer thing, it was just like, what? This is the weirdest thing ever. A Transformer gun. I can't believe, in a way, I can believe that isn't a toy, but they still should be toys, like various firearms turn into robot men. That'd be awesome. It's every kid's favorite thing, robots and violence. Like, perfect. But I kind of did like the main characters. Like, at times, the writing seems a bit like it's trying to be too funny and unnaturalistic. But I genuinely did like Nicholas and Mac. You know.
Yeah, I liked their relationship with each other.
Yeah.
It seemed very natural and not your typical kind of film relationship, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it wasn't like overly lovey-dovey. It was sort of oddly real. It felt slightly like a sort of Kevin Smith movie at times. It was that kind of vibe. So it was good that they were likable, because if they were horrible and annoying, it would just make the film totally bad, you know? And I like...
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of funny, too. I also thought Robert Culp as Grandpa, like the three of them, and Goldberg as well. To be fair, like they did a lot in helping to make it watchable.
That's
yes.
So I give them credit for making what is essentially an awful cheap B movie into something a little bit more fun instead of tedious.
I agree.
But I guess the key point that happens is Grandpa gets killed and they make off on snow ski things. What was
snow
called?
Snowmobiles? Snowmobiles?
Yeah, snowmobiles.
Yeah.
The Grandpa's like crushed by the sleigh with the bison albino reindeer that flies, and he sort of, we get a hint that he might be the angel because he's sort of mouthing off to Santa and trying to distract him so that the kids can get away. And then we have the most amazing slash awful like action sequence that is probably the worst part of the movie. Not worst, it's just the cheapest part of the film, I'd say. Does anyone want to explaining the scene I'm on about?
Running around inside the school?
No, the snowmobile chase with explosions and bad cutaways to Santa.
Well, it's just them being chased by Santa in his flying sleigh, throwing present bombs, I guess.
Yeah.
Right?
just whatever they thought of. Like, I think because he can breathe fire and conjure fire from his palm. They don't really nail down any of his powers as evil magic Santa.
No.
But it's so cheaply done. Because it's so clear that, like, Goldberg is just in cutaways. There's someone in a studio. And that they're, like, then the explosions are put on so badly over the top in the trees and stuff. It's just, what is this?
Although I will say there is some nice stunt work.
Like on the snowmobiles where they like get it up on one side and things. Is that what you
mean? Yeah.
A little bit, but it cuts together so awfully.
Yeah, fair enough.
did anyone enjoy
it? Santa just...
Sorry.
I don't know, I enjoyed him picking up the pasta and just putting him in the sleigh for no reason.
Oh yeah, we didn't mention the evil pasta. It's weird saying evil pasta, because I mean the minister guy, yeah. But it does sound wrong.
Yeah. I think it's because ultimately
he's just sleazy
pasta, yeah.
I think ultimately he doesn't really amount to anything. So
he's there as a sort of decoy body for when Santa's killed at the end, isn't he?
Yeah, that's it. And he just adds to the whole flavour of everyone in this town is a weird, horrible person.
The only place I've seen the sleazy minister pasta guy is in Rat Race as, like, the stooge of...
John Cleese, oh yeah!
Like, it's so weird. Like, that's the only place. I guess he's in a few low-budget comedies, I think.
He was in a sitcom in the 90s called Grace Under Fire. That's where I recognised him from.
All right.
You watched Grace Under Fire?
Mm. Yeah, let's not draw too much attention.
So I just think we have one of the more appalling moments. But it is, in its rubbishness, it is kind of fun. And I think Anthony's right. There were some bits where you go, at least they made some effort in filming this. But it's just, when Santa looks down at them and is annoyed he missed, it looks particularly wrong. It's just, clearly wasn't right at all.
Yeah, I know what you mean. That's like this. That's 1940s special effects there, guys.
Well done. But like... We do get the scene in the school that they have to break into the school to escape for some reason. There's some more bonding between the main characters as well. They do develop the relationship a little bit, and it isn't quite as corny as a Christmas movie can be. So I was pleased with that. And they get into the school anyway. And that basically just culminates in the grand finale, which involves curling, of course, and an ice buffer.
It does have one of the moments I did really enjoy when Santa's like stalking them through the library, and then he starts reading A Christmas Carol and says Christmas can really scare the dickens out of people, and then throws the book at Nicholas's head, and like it's the fact that it hits him directly in the forehead doesn't like do any severe damage, just really really hurts, and I thought That was nice and grounded in reality, that moment.
It's a sort of petulant moment in Vite of slaughter.
Yeah, where he just kind of goes, ow!
You jerk! It is funny. Like, it is just, it's full of these little moments where you kind of go, you just thought of the gag and did it, didn't you? There was no reason for any of this.
Satanic Santa with, like, supernatural powers just throws a book at his head.
I know. just to make some Dickens-related jokes.
Yeah.
Oh, the kid should have been like, what the Dickens?
But, yeah, it may as well have gone all out with it.
Just really milk the Christmas Carol jokes. Oh. But, yeah, so they get to the ice rink in the school. I don't know. It seems rather serendipitous. Sorry?
It's Canada.
Oh, yeah. You're thinking. Of course. Why am I surprised? But it is for the reason of curling seemed to be relevant to the origin story. There's also some tie-in to the North Pole end of Christmas is when the evil Santa loses his powers that he's not particularly using very much. There's a stupid reason for all this. They don't really get into it. But it culminates in a kind of epic curling finale. just as evil Santa's going to like crush them to death in the ice rink ice buffer that gets stopped somehow by a curling in the back. Like, I don't... What? Like, what was this thing? Like, what on earth?
I don't know. The film seemed to have, like, an epileptic fit at the end, and I'm not quite sure what happened.
It did have another great moment, though, when they start their curling competition, and he stomps the hole to hell in the ground, and they have to curl toward... I don't know how to describe curling. They have to, like, throw their curling blobs at the hole or whatever.
They slide the curling stones or whatever, yeah.
But then the bit that legitimately made me laugh was when Grandpa does it first, and then it's Santa's turn, and he brushes the bottom of his, like a proper, you know, curling professional before he has his go.
It is kind of remarkable. And what happens then? Because basically, like, he cheats or something? Or like Santa throws...
He throws Grandpa in the hole, and then goes after the kids, and then he gets shot by a nutcracker.
That's one of the foreshadowed gadgets that has been made is an explosive nutcracker.
and it works. That's the thing. It works. And then it doesn't, and he gets up and leaves.
I think it was mainly an excuse for a very terrible pun that I've deleted from my memory.
Oh, chestnut.
Oh. That's reminded me as well of one that happens just before that we missed, where who's your daddy, Father Christmas?
That made no sense. Even after he said it, just go, what?
And the weirdest bit of that is he says it, makes this terrible joke, and then he pulls out this glowing green candy cane as if he's going to do something with it, and then just drops it on the floor and keeps walking.
Like, it's like a glow stick marker that a SWAT team would use. Just, yeah, I've been in this corridor.
Yeah, that's what I thought he was doing. I thought he was, like, laying flares for himself and that it was setting up something for later, but nope.
It's just one of these bits where you kind of go, like, what? Like, but then you don't have enough time to think about it. But, like, the other thing I didn't really mention, but, like, Grandpa's an angel, and he was the angel from the story, and he has a magical come-back-to-life moment.
Yeah,
it just saves them in the nick of time. But he can't leave the ice rink as well because magic stuff. I don't understand.
They pull him out of the hole, but then he can't leave, and he throws the curling puck down the hole, which seals it up.
Yeah,
and then he can't leave, and they say, and Nicholas is like, I'm not leaving you again, and he says, like, I didn't raise no Sally or something.
Sally means, apparently Sally's a derogatory term in Canada.
Well, it seems like they couldn't afford to use the word sissy for copyright reasons, so, and then he does that I'll be around thing and makes himself a halo and vanishes.
Oh, Ab, there was that bit you mentioned that was really blatant, like, the bit with the hole where he dives in one way, and they kind of, what was he,
He gets thrown in head first into quite a narrow hole, but when they get back to him, he's the other way up.
Just somehow clinging on for his life. Just utter rubbish. Like, it's also a bit, when they use the shotgun on Santa, they shoot it out the back of the like van window, but it doesn't break the glass. Like, it's still there. It makes no sense. There's loads of bits like that where you kind of go, guys, did you not think there was a flaw when you filmed this? What were you thinking?
True, but I think the film retains enough enjoyment in the moments like that for you to go, yeah, okay.
This does kind of bring us to a whole sequence I didn't understand
second of. Totally.
What was happening with the hunters?
The weird clay pigeon skeet shooting dudes.
Yeah, and the guy with the electronic voice box.
Native American smoking Indian guy or whatever who has a voice box, and they're all out shooting like clay pigeons of Christmas Eve or day or whatever it is.
Yeah, and one of them is Mac's older brother who just insults Nicholas but doesn't really do anything else. Yeah.
They just throw them all in like we should know who they are already.
Yeah, and then his dad turns up with a rocket launcher and blows up the reindeer. What?
We never get... The dad is never brought up or mentioned as well.
No.
He just turns up with a bazooka.
That's not true. It is slightly foreshadowed here and there. And you're kind of like, there's something going on with guns here. There's a theme of guns going on.
Yeah.
And you're not sure what it is.
Is it?
Yeah, well,
But by the end... By the end, it's like, okay, they shot everyone. But what's the real message about guns here, Phil?
Guns will save you in the nick of time.
Yeah.
Especially if they're really big.
The Wolverine joke as well. They're like, my dad shot a Wolverine. I brought you some meat. There's just some rancid meat for the grandpa to eat. And it's just like, what the heck was that joke? Like, what, that was such a like weird way to just bring up the dad, I guess, and make a rubbish joke at the same time.
This is one of the things that I didn't understand. Like, the film seemed to be moving with some kind of like interdimensional House of Leaves logic here.
House of Leaves.
Did the pastor, minister, whatever, he was in the sleigh that was just randomly flying around?
He got punched out by Santa and was with Santa in the sleigh when it got exploded, and right. Santa escaped inexplicably from the explosion.
Well, how did he get back on the sleigh? Because the last time we see him, he's riding through the wall of the hockey rink.
Isn't he blown up?
Yeah,
he wasn't in the sleigh when it was exploded.
Yeah, it doesn't show him get back on. It's just the pastor, and then he falls and he gets impaled on the flagpole, and then they all go, "Oh, it must have been him. He must have been the supernatural Santa that's been terrorizing the town." Clearly, he's as giant as all the witnesses saw, and then they cut him to pieces.
And when they cut him up to pieces, some dude rocks up with like a police uniform on and a wicked moustache with like a massive buzzsaw and has some line. It's like, who's that guy? Is that like the director? Who's this guy got? Like just this hard looking, like scrawny cop. Just like, hey, I'm here to chop up Santa. Like, what? That was an odd moment.
I like that everyone in this scene seems to be having a laugh. Like, nobody's taking any of this seriously. They're like, oh, it's the pastor, lol. Let's cut him up. And like, what?
It was just, the whole town has been terrorized by a serial killer, basically, with supernatural powers. And some of them are just happily getting on with their day, shooting pigeons and stuff. Like, what?
At night, on Christmas.
Guess it's better than sitting in with the family. Oh, but then
that's our happy ending, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, well, we cut up a priest and then...
And the evil demon is not actually dead.
Yeah.
And we'll probably come back next year.
Well, that's it. I like that they set it up for a sequel as well.
There is a sequel. Yeah. I don't know how it ties in, but there is Santa's Sleigh 2.
You are joking.
I think so. Those Goldberg's back again or what, but I think I saw it mentioned somewhere. I don't know. But we'll save that for next Christmas, eh?
Yeah. Much worse films have had sequels. So it's not entirely impossible, I guess.
Nicholas like kept the book and didn't say anything. Even Mac says, why didn't you tell them, everything that's happened? And he's like,
Would you believe this crackpot story?
And he says, I think my saga's just beginning. And I thought, nah, it's not.
It's not me. that's the peak it. There. He does kind of hook up with his friend and stuff, and they kind of go to back to normal life, I guess. And the only kind of bit at the end is we see Santa having shaved a bit and dressing a bit like a biker, catching a plane back to the North Pole. Just being a bit sinister in the airport.
Has your sack been out of your sight in the last... Oh, God.
One last shout for rubbish Christmas-themed jokes.
I just remembered as well one of the things that we skipped over with Nicholas about people not believing Nicholas if he told them the actual story was when he uses his computer very early on in the film to find a Santa tracker and to like a live chat. And first of all, it's the fact that he uses, is it like
who are search or something like that?
Sings at him when he clicks the search button. Yeah. Clicks it and he goes, hoo yah. And then he finds the Santa tracker, goes into a live chat, asks if it's real, and then the person in the chat says, how old are you? And he says, 16. And they say, no, it's absolutely not real. Like, there's a suggestion here that there's some kind of government conspiracy that knows Santa's real and dangerous, and then it never comes up again. Like, I thought that was the way they were going to go with it. Like, you know, there's this big conspiracy to keep it secret and to keep the world safe, but no, just doesn't come up again.
It was weird. They did seem to put a bit of effort into faking like how a computer would look on the internet, didn't they? They did make some effort there. Well done, them. Again, just little bits of effort here and there where other places lack it.
Instead of lots for the whole film.
Certain bits, high production value, or at least a good attempt at trying to pastiche something. Oh, dear.
Before we finish talking about the film, I want to talk about the weird, really slow, awkward roll call at the end of all the people. Do you remember that?
No.
It was just right at the end. Like in a film where the credits are coming, so they show little flashbacks the film, and they just show a little bit, like, here's the main character, here's the next character, just a little bit.
Yeah.
But the ones they choose are all really long and awkward, and it's really weird. Did no one else notice that?
I think that kind of sums up the film.
Yeah. It really is just them standing around, and I don't know if I watched a different version to you, because mine was in HD, I should mention, because I'm the one saying it's got production value. Maybe like the HD added to it. Who knows?
I can't believe that it made the explosions look like they were genuinely there.
But no, this roll call, it's just your average roll call where they show all the main characters. Yeah. But they choose really odd moments where they're just being kind of still and awkward for a long time.
Like those moments at the end of, like, Police Story, which we've mentioned in another podcast commentary, I think, where they all pretend freeze that they're a police squad. What did I say? Yeah.
Police Story, which is a Jackie Chan movie.
Yeah, not Jackie Chan movies. They do the weird bloopers in them. Police Squad. Yes.
There was also bloopers in the version that I watched.
They
were not funny in the slightest.
Were they just flubbing lines and stuff?
No, it wasn't even that. It was just really banal stuff like, oh, Goldberg dropped his stick.
Oh, no. Oh, dear.
It really was. It was either that or there was some kind of weird stunt crash, which was a little bit awkward to watch.
Well, that's good to know that if you actually get hold of a nice, high-quality copy, it is maybe available on YouTube, listener, if you aren't sold enough by our thing to buy it yourself. But anyway, guys, we should give our final thoughts and summing up and all that and think of a Christmas-themed rating system, maybe just something Christmassy that sums up what the film is. Abby, do you want to go first with your final thoughts?
I've got a lot of affection for this movie, even though it is flawed on many levels. I still kind of like it for the stuff that it does right, and its general feeling. It feels like they enjoy doing it, and consequently, I enjoy watching it.
Yeah,
So I like this movie.
What festive piece of bric-a-brac would you say that this film is symbolically rated as?
It's so hard to say. Oh, this is really specific. In your mum's house.
Oh, I know what you're going to mention, aren't you?
The snowball with a face and legs.
Yeah, my mum has the most amazing Christmas ornament ever. It's a snowball with a face and a hat and scarf and gloves and things, but it's also sledding. And it's just a snowball, a human snowball, sledding, and it's covered in glitter. And it's the most gaudy and cheap looking piece of Christmas tat you could imagine. And I think you're right, Abby. This movie is exactly that knick-knack. Just gaudy, cheap, awful, and inexplicable. And it's sleighing, so...
It is!
Oh, it's tobogganing, I don't know.
It's close enough.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Anthony?
Yeah, I'm under the same kind of thing as Abby. It's... I really kind of enjoyed watching the film. Even though it was, the jokes were terrible, you couldn't help but laughing just at the sheer amount of them. I thought it had quite a bit of production value, being a slight connoisseur of this kind of film myself. I thought it ranks up there with some of the best.
And yet, yeah, like superbly, you said, like... low in quality.
Well, what can you say? But yeah, I enjoyed all the actors. They were clearly having fun. Everyone was having fun. It was just like a nice big cliched parody of Christmas tropes with horror as well. Yeah, I actually recommend it. I think there was a bit of effort put into this, where usually there isn't.
There'll be some scoffing at Christmas time, and that's all you can hope for, really, when watching a Christmas movie.
Yeah. I don't have, like, a knick-knack per se, but I suppose, like, this is, like, the... For me, it's that kind of... That new Christmas tradition that is brought in. It's like a new family member has joined, and they want to do something different for Christmas this year, and it's like, oh, well, I don't know about that. And but then everyone enjoys it, and then it becomes a tradition every year for the whole family. So that's how I would describe this film in my life, anyway.
Aww, it's so sweet.
Like, some people like watch Home Alone or Die Hard at Christmas time every year, but maybe in Anthony's house there's going to be a tradition of watching Santa's Sleigh, and probably Santa's Sleigh too if we ever get around to it. But yeah, that makes sense. Jamie, what about you?
When it started with that scene with, you know, him just slaughtering that family and James Caan, it set my teeth on edge. Like, it started, and I thought, oh, I'm
Is that a phrase? Set your teeth on edge?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I'll back down.
I thought, I'm going to hate every minute of this. Like, I got a feeling in my gut. I was like, oh, I already feel sick. But then once it actually got going and, like, introduced Nicholas and Mac, and Goldberg really started to get to enjoy himself, I kind of enjoyed a lot of it in spite of myself. And I kept, like, properly laughing at stuff and then thinking, oh, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
What? That's not funny. Why am I laughing?
That line with the Transformer gun, man. That's when I turned a corner myself.
It was so just cheap and rubbish and not actually funny in a genuine way. So endearingly stupid. Like, it's just a stupid film, and like everyone involved seemed well aware of it. Like, it has no ideas above its station.
Yeah.
It's just like, this is just dumb. And like, they've just made it and watched it, like they watched it back and probably laughed in very much the same way that I did watching it.
It's like a student film where everyone has done really pretentious try and get the grade stuff, and then someone just had fun, and it's the student film that everyone was utterly creased and loved entirely because it was just cheap and funny, and who cares?
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's what I think. The director watched it back and went, "What? Okay, whatever. Who cares?"
Yeah, I laughed. Job done.
Yeah,
That is the main thing with a comedy, I think. If you can make someone laugh, it doesn't matter how. If you laughed, you've succeeded.
Yeah. As far as, like, Christmas tat, I don't know. I would just say cheap crackers. You know, the kind where you get a box of them and every single one of them has that little plastic frog inside.
those like, mood reading fish that fold up on your hand. So yeah. Disappointing and random.
And with the lame joke, don't forget the lame jokes.
Exactly. Yeah, see, exactly.
It's an explosion, a really bad one, a lame joke, and a disappointing toy.
And yet, just because it's Christmas, you would love it.
Yeah.
You'd all sit around the table while you eat food, flicking those little plastic frogs across the table at each other.
That's true. Yeah. Oh, well done. Gosh, you've all said pretty much what I was thinking. Yeah, in my opinion, I haven't got much to add, guys. You've said it all, really. But for something with the production value of a particularly bad episode of the Power Rangers, it's kind of funny and all right. In its stupid Christmas puns and crackpot violence and badly written story, it is kind of funny. I would recommend it as well. Abby kind of stole my idea for a piece of Christmasage. There's another thing in my house as part of the Christmas decorations that is inexplicable, but more so than the snowman, snowball man. I have a nativity scene in my passage that my mum puts up that for some reason has a toy tapir amongst it. I don't know why the tapir gets packed away with the Christmas stuff, but I have taken to always putting the tapir with the nativity looking over baby Jesus. So it is that tapir. It is inexplicable, somehow Christmas themed, and just ridiculous and funny and stupid. So that's what I think it is.
Tapir.
Sorry?
I never knew there was a tapir there. You should check it out.
Looking after the swaddling babe. But with our said, let's put this Christmas podcast underneath the Christmas tree for people to unwrap. I can almost do a Christmas metaphor, but then I spoil it by just harpooning it with my own self-analysis. Let's string up the lights and close the shop and eat turkey.
Like the menorah.
Like the bloody menorah. And pick up what's left of the Christmas baubles that give off weird smoke that doesn't seem to do anything apart from make you cough. Which we didn't mention in this. There's a weird bauble thing at one point.
I assumed that they were fart bombs myself. It seems like the kind of thing he would use.
Yeah, let's just smash all the Christmas decorations into a big pile and say goodbye to the listeners, yeah?
Yeah.
Sure.
Bye.
Bye.
Christmas.